Stony Brook.
This is the Gulf War Citizen Action Update, heard every hour on the hour on WUSB Stony Brook. On Monday, February 4th at 6 p.m., there will be a meeting at the Graduate Student Organization in the Senate Meeting Room at the Stony Brook campus in a building called Central Hall on the second floor. That meeting is taking place by the Stony Brook Coalition for Peace in the Middle East. And again, that's Monday, February 4th at 6 p.m., Central Hall, Graduate Student Organization, Senate Meeting Room. There will be a speakout on Wednesday, February 6th at 12:30 p.m. in front of the Administration Building. And on Monday, February 11th, a teach-in is scheduled. Stay tuned for further information on that. There will be a rally in support of U.S. troops in the Persian Gulf on Wednesday, February 13th at 12:30 p.m. That will be at the Fine Arts Plaza at the Stony Brook campus. That's sponsored by the Stony Brook Commuter College. If you're interested in finding out news from Israel as news comes in, you can call the Israel line, which is updated by the Consulate General of Israel in New York every day. Their phone number is 212-351-5333. Some other phone numbers that may be of interest. The Coalition for Peace in the Middle East, 516-689-7290. The Long Island Council of Churches, 727-2210. And the Long Island Families Desert Shield Support Group, 741-4454. If you need to find out the address or telephone number of any elected official, you can call the League of Women Voters. Their Long Island number is 516-549-4171. In Connecticut, they can be reached at 203-288-7996. The Gulf War Citizen Action Update is heard every hour on the hour on WUSB Stony Brook. If you have information that you would like to pass along to us, or if you have any comments regarding this service, please call us at 516-632-6498.
This is Mario Cuomo for WUSB in Stony Brook.
February 2nd. You might notice Jupiter around now, a brilliant object in the east each evening. Jupiter's now nearest Earth for the year. Under exceptional conditions, on a clear, dark night with no moon, you might glimpse one of Jupiter's moons with just your eye. Or try binoculars. They'd help reveal a moon or two. Jupiter has 16 moons in all. The four large Galilean satellites are like planets. Two are larger than the planet Mercury. Their surfaces are very different from each other or any other worlds we know. One clue to the history of the four satellites is the abundance or lack of craters on their surface. In general, craters on a planet or moon were formed long ago by impacting debris that flew loose in the solar system. One of the Galilean satellites has a record of these impacts etched on its surface. Callisto, the outermost of the four, is totally covered with craters. The pockmarked surface of Callisto is one of the oldest planetary surfaces we know. The satellite that orbits inward from Callisto is Ganymede, and it has craters too. But Ganymede's craters are fewer in number. This moon's surface is younger than Callisto's. It's undergone some geologic change. When you consider the surface of the next moon inward, Europa, a pattern begins to emerge. Europa has far fewer craters than Ganymede, and the next moon inward, Io, has no impact craters at all. In other words, as you go inward toward Jupiter, the Galilean satellites have younger and younger surface features. Why should they? There are some theories, but so far no one knows. Stardate and Stardate Magazine are productions of the MacDonald Observatory at the University of Texas. And for the MacDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
Eternal God, we approach thee.
Saturday night, February 16th at the Stony Brook Union Bi-Level, SBH and Turmoil presents a benefit concert for WUSB with Bug Out Society.
What's the matter with you girls? Can't you see? We're the Bug Out Society!
The Voodoo Love Gods. And Born Against. Tickets are $5 with Stony Brook ID, $6 without, $8 night of the show. Please bring some form of ID. This concert is co-sponsored by the Department of Student Union and Activities. For more information, call 632-6498.
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in...
changed. The new number is 2. Please make a note of it.
Please repeat.
Hello, you've reached WUSB, Long Island's first station of the 90s, located
at 90.1 FM. Yes, it's 8 minutes after 10 o'clock, and good evening to one and all. This is Brain Damage. Excuse me, Eric Corley here with you until midnight. And, well, I guess you can sort of surmise what the main subject of the day is going to be. Of course, the only subject really worth talking about is the war that we are involved in. At the risk of getting all repetitious and talking about the same thing all the time, I'd like to open it up to people to discuss different aspects of it, and maybe new developments. We'll have updated news and all that kind of thing for you. Before we get into that, though, something that I picked up last night in the city, which I think everybody should have a copy of, is a great magazine called The Quail Quarterly. That's right, The Quail Quarterly. It keeps a watchful eye on the vice presidency. It's a magazine devoted to nothing but Dan Quayle news. And it's got quite a staff, too. At least 20 people working on this thing. And it's published out of Bridgeport, Connecticut. And Let me read you a couple of letters here to sort of give you an idea of what the Quail Quarterly is all about. A letter entitled Deep Doo-Doo. We have a small dog, a Yorkshire Terrier named Norton. Advertised in your publication was a Dan Quail doormat, which we have in our kitchen at the entrance to the dining room. After pouring out good money for obedience school, trying behavior modification techniques, begging, scolding, and even trickery to get Norton to follow one command with a consistent and immediate response, we accidentally hit upon the magic words, sit on Quail's face. Now he can dine undisturbed by Norton while knowing exactly where he is. Who knows, he may be the first animal to make a political statement. That letter comes out of Memphis, Tennessee. And here's one entitled Bolstering Bush. The incessant chatter about Dan Quail attests to the canniness, that's right, of his selection and to our own human foolishness. Without such a deliberately quail-esque foil, Mr. Bush feared that he might appear insubstantial, ridiculous, and incompetent. By having Mr. Quail aboard the same platform, Mr. Bush quiets his own fears. That letter comes from Mill Valley, California. Now, a series of letters here under the heading of Pride, Patriotism, and Prejudice. Is your quarterly funny? No. Is your quarterly clever? No. Is your quarterly damaging? Yes. Someday you will stand before God and be judged for what you are doing. There is no escaping it. If you have a Bible, read it for yourself. And that letter came out of A. Campo, California. Here's another one. Socialist fools. You liberal nonconformists are a stain on the shorts of humanity. Senator McCarthy had the right idea when he started seeking out and destroying you left-wing drug users. You flag-burning pigs should not have the right to coexist with us decent, God-fearing Americans. And that one comes out of Olympia, Washington. And finally, out of Stockton, California, dear monkey shiners, it is great that you give so much attention to the most active and greatest vice president in the history of the U.S. When Truman was vice president, he was said to be a weak one. As president, he showed how mistaken and stupid his downgraders were. Please keep up the good work of showing your ignorance and Quail's efficiency in your sneaky manner. P.S. You should donate 10,000 copies to the homeless, the intellectuals of your class. Not quite sure I want to go further with that. On the back of this terrific magazine is an advertisement. For love of country, keep George healthy. You can get bumper stickers and T-shirts and sweatshirts and all kinds of things like that. And all throughout this, there's pictures of Quail in various poses and things that he says. Best of the press, for instance. Here's a quote. Teachers are the only profession that teach our children. I hope they're not getting into this just as a job or a way to put food on the table. Quotes like that, you know, that's what makes Dan Quail the person he is. Or how about this one, taken from the Herald Tribune, July 23rd, 1990. While I have not apologized for my National Guard service and never will, I recognize that the members of my generation who served in Vietnam made a sacrifice that was far, far greater than mine. Quail supports efforts to limit the terms of members of Congress, especially members of the House and members of the Senate. Yeah. Quail warned the oil industry against price gouging because of the Persian Gulf crisis. This comes from the Detroit Free Press. September 13, 1990. He said, don't do it. Don't take advantage of this situation, because if you do, you're going to be sorry. All he needs is a big stick, and he's all set. 43 demonstrators were arrested outside the Portland Hilton as Republicans gathered to hear Quail speak at a fundraiser. Officers on horseback moved into the crowd using nightsticks to drive the protesters back. Police seized American flags as protesters tried to ignite them. Indianapolis Star, September 25th, 1990. Take it from a guy who knows a lot about unwarranted criticism. Once they pile it on, they just don't know when to stop. So Quail defended NASA from critics a few hours before the agency scrubbed the launch of Columbia for the third time. It comes from the Houston Post. And there's all kinds of advertisements here for things like a quail watch. Buy a quail watch because a mind is a terrible thing to lose. high-quality gold-tone watch with color face, leather band, and three-year warranty. And new for 1990 Gorby and Bush watches as well. Impeach Quail First bumper stickers, red, white, and blue. How about this? A Dan Quayle 900 bloopers and jokes line. Free Dan Quayle watch to every 50th caller. 1-900-USA-DANNY. It made me laugh, it made me cry, says Michael Gim, sales manager of Computronics. Hear Dan Quayle jokes and bloopers, Dan Quayle songs and merchandise. Record your own jokes. It's just incredible here. The Dan Quayle quiz book for people who think they are smarter than the vice president. In his short time in the public spotlight, Vice President Dan Quayle has amassed an amazing record of bloopers and blunders. Here, as a tribute to the man who makes everyone feel smart, is a quiz book on the life and words of our 44th Vice President. Now is your chance to match wits with the happy hooser. Separate fact from fiction as you discover your DQIQ, Dan Quayle intelligence quotient. Then you got Quayle Droppings, The Politics of J. Danforth Quayle by Arthur Frederick Ide. And it goes on about various details. How about this? A Dan Quayle calendar. A Dan for All Seasons, 1991, available from the Quayle Quarterly. Boy, this is incredible. Dan Quayle t-shirts. Dan Quayle, underachiever and proud of it, man. Oh, yes, the Ballad of Dan Quayle record album. Comedy and topical songs contains Where's Dan Quayle and The Ballad of Dan Quayle by Dr. Joe, writer and performer of a top 50 single as seen on national TV, and Stand By Your Dan, performed by the Capitol Steps. So I guess if you're interested in subscribing to the Quayle Quarterly, I might as well give out their address since they provided me so much entertainment for today. The Quayle Quarterly, P.O. Box 8593, Brewster Station, Bridgeport, Connecticut, 06605. Wow. You know, there's a lot of people out there that that think this is dangerous to be talking about things like this, but go soak your head in a bucket. That's what I have to say to you people. I've had it up to here with the zealotry and the nationalism and the patriotism for now. You know, it's never is there more of a time to use humor and dissent. That's what makes us supposedly better than the rest, right? Okay, what's going on in the world? An Army Reserve doctor who deserted her unit in protest of the Persian Gulf War says she's prepared to face a possible court-martial. Captain Yolanda Hewitt Vaughn surrendered to military authorities in Kansas City today. She deserted from Fort Leonard Wood after her unit was called to active duty December 20th. She's in the reserves to fulfill her obligation to the service, which helped pay for medical school. The 39-year-old mother of three says she doesn't want to take part in the war she says will cause massive casualties that the U.S.-led forces aren't prepared to treat. She says serving in the war would be tacitly to support an immoral gamble with human lives. The military spokeswoman says the military will determine the charges and whether to conduct a court-martial. What else do we have for today? U.S. officials in Saudi Arabia say at least 50 American military vehicles are missing from a U.S. compound, and some officers fear they may have been stolen by terrorists. An officer with the Army's 1st Armored Division says military police have no clues on the missing 5-ton trucks, Jeep-like Humvees, and other Army vehicles, but a pool report, a super-censored controlled report coming out of the Mideast, says some officers are convinced the missing vehicles were just used for spare parts. An intelligence officer says it's cannibalization, pure and simple. And a London newspaper says British forces in the Persian Gulf are being warned that Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein is ready to use chemical weapons at long last. The Sunday Times reports that Saddam has authorized frontline commanders to use chemical weapons at their discretion. The newspaper says the Allies are now bracing themselves for a nerve or mustard gas attack that could come at any time. It quotes Pentagon sources as saying it's no longer a question of if Iraq will use chemical weapons, but when. A Ministry of Defense spokeswoman says she wasn't aware of a warning to British troops, but she says she wouldn't be surprised if there was a briefing. She says she has no information that Saddam approved the use of chemical weapons. Okay, what else do we have here? For the first time since Thursday, Iraq has launched more Scud missiles, two at Israel and one at Saudi Arabia's capital, Riyadh. The Riyadh missile was hit by a U.S. Patriot rocket, but police say fragments landed on the residential neighborhood, damaging apartment buildings and causing two minor injuries, and only light damage reported from the second of the two missiles that hit Israel. I wonder how many missiles are hitting Iraq right now. Probably 10 times that amount have hit Iraq since the time I started reading that story. But we don't care about them, do we? Iraq's army newspaper says Iraqis will use any means, ranging from kitchen knives to weapons of mass destruction, to fight the Allies. The newspaper Al-Ghadizia, which probably means something like strong words and empty threats and all that kind of thing, says Iraq's leadership and people will not give up their country. President Saddam Hussein has said Iraq would use chemical weapons if such weapons are used by the U.S.-led multinational force. That's completely different than everything else we've been hearing, isn't it? I mean, I'll read that sentence again. President Saddam Hussein has said Iraq would use chemical weapons if such weapons are used by the U.S.-led multinational force. So, doesn't sound like a threat to use chemical weapons to me, at least not that particular statement. Two foreign TV journalists reported from Iraq today of renewed allegations that the Allies are targeting civilian areas. The reporters who said their stories had been cleared by the Iraqi government say they were shown bomb sites that apparently included civilian targets. And President Bush is calling on Americans to pray for peace in the Persian Gulf. In a recorded radio address released today, Bush also called on listeners to pray for the safety of the troops in the Gulf. The president and his wife, Barbara, plan to attend Sunday services in a chapel at Camp David, where they're spending the weekend. Maybe we should all pray for peace here, or just pray for an end to the insanity that's going on over there. All right, we're going to play a piece of a record here, which I heard on this radio station on Thursday, and it was just so incredible. So incredible that I felt I had to play it tonight. It's something that came out back in the 70s, back in 1973. And it has to do a lot with Vietnam. It's a Joan Baez record. And what we're going to hear is a ballad written, spoken, and sung by Joan Baez about the 11 days of bombing she experienced in Hanoi, Vietnam, over Christmas of 1972. Yeah, that's right. She went to enemy territory to experience bombing, pretty much like some people have done in Baghdad. And while a lot of people would say that makes her an enemy of the people, I think it makes her a rather educated person. Listen to this and judge for yourself based upon the work that she came out with. Interspersed with and superimposed upon it are sounds recorded on her portable tape machine, such things as children laughing, sirens blaring, bombs falling, women singing, moments shared inside their hotel bomb shelter with Indians, Poles, Cubans, French, Vietnamese, a matter-of-fact discussion about fear and death with Monty, a Cuban sailor whose ship was stuck in the mined Haiphong Harbor, and a segment of the press conference of six American pilots shot down during the first night of bombing, things like that. It's a really incredible piece here, so I urge everybody to sit back and listen to this and then give us a call later on as we're taking phone calls and talking about all this kind of thing. If you have any other suggestions of things we should do, well, call us later and we'll talk about it. This is Joan Baez here on WUSB. Thank you.
The sound in the background is a jet that has gone by. I can hear some bombs in the distance. The sky is lighting up, so something's going on somewhere.
It's Thursday morning, 7:45, and we're going off to see Nam Tien Street, Nam Tien District, where the bombing was extremely heavy the last couple nights, and to see the site where a B-52 was downed. Oh my. A woman is crying in the background. Oh my son, where are you?
Walking to the battleground that always makes me cry. I've met so few folks in my time who weren't afraid to die. But dawn bleeds with the people here and morning skies are red as young girls load up bicycles with flowers for the dead. An aging woman picks along the craters and the rubble, a piece of cloth, a bit of shoe, a whole lifetime of trouble. A sobbing chant comes from her throat and splits the morning air. The single son she had last night is buried under her. Unsteady gait and beard of ancient white, bent to the ground with arms outstretched, faltering in his plight. I took his hand to steady him. He stood and did not turn, but smiled and wept and bowed and mumbled softly, "Danke schön." The children on the roadsides of the villages and towns would stand around us laughing as we stood like giant clowns. The morning bands told who they'd lost by last night's phantom messenger, and they spoke their only words in English: Johnson, Nixon, Kissinger. Gives a running break to those who live in town. Take the children and the blankets to the concrete underground. Sometimes we'd sing and joke and paint bright pictures on the wall and wonder if we would die well and if we'd loved at all.
But I prefer the action of the nights before than this night when you are waiting.
Yeah.
Because when you are running from here to the shelter and from the shelter to here, yeah, the time passes much faster than when you are now waiting for the attack.
I know.
We are not afraid to the attack. If we die, that's all. We die. We're going to die only one time. Anyway, we're going to die now or a little after. You cannot be afraid of any situation.
I can.
After you get the custom, it's very
easy. Será, será.
Should be, would be.
Oh, shit. Thank God you're safe here. Take it down.
I'm taking with me the wonderful guava. As in the bomb. Guava bomb. This you can relate.
It's quite the same possibility. Are you recording this?
Yes, I am. But something that we can enjoy later on. Look, and who do we have here? Smiling cheerfully with its pants undone in the doorway.
Cuban. What do you do?
I do a poem, sir.
Yes.
Well, the mood of the evening is definitely up. It's a discourse between the Indian and the Pole. It's causing the joviality.
Why did you come back?
Thank you.
No more burning love. Kumbaya. No more darling love, kumbaya. No more darling love, kumbaya. Oh Lord, kumbaya. Save the children, Lord. Kumbaya, save the children, Lord.
Down considerably here in the shelter. The conclusion being that the siren was broken. So people kind of filtered out. It left one Cuban, two Indians, Mike sprawled out on the floor, Barry and myself. But I've got to stay here and get stuck in the mosquito net in my bed.
The helmetless defiant ones sit on the curb and stare at tracers flashing through the sky and planes bursting in air. But way out in the villages, no warning comes before a blast that means a sleeping child will never make it to the door. cabins in the sky where no man hears the sound of death on earth from his own bombs. 6 pilots were shot down. Next day, 6 hulking bandaged men were dazzled by a room of newsmen. Sally, keep the faith. Let's hope this war ends soon. Oh, sweet southern looking boys. Couple of bandages. It showed around a circle of people. He's baffled, and he looks as though he's pretty sore. Bones sore. Christ. Is this lost? That's all. Lost. The cameras are going.
My name is Richard Thomas. Service number is 250-6-6-6-0.
He's a blonde boy. With a mustache and a little scar. Looks absolutely dazed. It's utterly dazed. In a damaged prison camp where they no longer had command, they shook their heads. What irony. We thought peace was at hand. The preacher read a Christmas prayer and the men kneeled on the ground. Then sheepishly asked me to sing, They Drove Old Dixie Down. Gathered in the lobby, celebrating Christmas Eve. The French, the Poles, the Indians, Cubans and Vietnamese. The tiny tree our host had fixed sweetened familiar psalms, but the most sacred of Christian prayers was shattered by the bombs.
Thank you. John. Go on, John. Nothing. It is a
continue,
John. John, go on, just go on.
Heard a jet in the background.
No, maybe you're just my stomach.
We've decided to go down into the shelter.
So back into the shelter, where two lovely women rose, and with a brilliance and a fierceness and a gentleness which froze the rest of us to silence as their voices soared with joy, outshining every bomb that fell that night upon Hanoi. People of the shelters, what a gift you've given me, to smile at me and quietly let me share your agony. And I can only bow in utter humbleness and ask forgiveness and forgiveness for the things we've brought to pass. The black pajamaed culture that we tried to kill with pellet holes and the rows of tiny coffins we've paid for with our souls have built a spirit seldom seen in women and in men, and the white flower of Bach Mai will surely blossom once again. My son.
And that was Joan Baez selling out her country and going over and hanging out with the enemy. You hear how dangerous those people were. Joan Baez, yes, from a record called Where Are You Now, My Son. And we heard side two of that. I don't know what's on side one. Side one is just looks like regular songs. Young Gypsy, Best of Friends, that kind of thing. So we're not going to bother with that. But something very similar is happening in Iraq. There are people that were over in Iraq during the bombing, determined to find the human aspect to all of this. And one of those people actually comes from our listening area, Kathy Boylan from, well, actually, it says here she's from Wyandanch, but it was my understanding she was from Northport. So I don't quite know how what the story is behind. Jordanian capital, in which she recalled the early hours of January 17th. It was a thunderous, oh, such an ominous noise. It seemed very high overhead, and yet the earth was trembling. Boyland, who is 47, arrived here by bus yesterday with 72 other members of the International Gulf Peace Team after evacuating a camp on the Iraqi-Saudi border Sunday. Boylan said the camp 100 miles west of Kuwait had not been the target of air raids, but she left it fearful for the people who would be the targets of the bombing. The Wyandanch resident and mother of five went to Iraq early last month, hoping to avert war by placing herself between the massed Iraqi army and the U.S.-led forces in Saudi Arabia. Her risky action was consistent with a long history of activism springing from a deep Catholic faith. She protested the Vietnam War 22 years ago. She lives in a shelter that has taken in Salvadoran refugees, and she has taken part in anti-nuclear demonstrations. She undertook the dangerous journey to Iraq, intending to be there when the United Nations deadline for Iraq to withdraw from Kuwait expired. Thank you very much. I felt that this was a situation where it wasn't enough to go around signing petitions, she said. Boylan joined activists from other countries at a traditional rest stop for Muslims making the pilgrimage from Iraq to the holy city of Mecca in Saudi Arabia. The group lived in seven canvas tents. During the day, Boylan said, she and the others would sing songs, hold meetings, cook simple meals of beans and rice, and carry out household chores. Nothing in there about plotting the violent overthrow of the U.S. government. Did you notice that? I did. In the early hours of January 17th, Boylan stumbled from her sleeping bag and looked up into a moonless sky as wave after wave of Allied fighter squadrons headed north toward their targets. For 10 nights, the activists heard warplanes pass. Though they seemed in no danger from air raids, many of the activists were happy to leave when Iraqi officials with military orders came in a bus to take them to Baghdad. Boylan and 12 others in her group sat in a silent circle and refused to move. They pleaded with us to get on the bus, she said. Finally, one man walked around the circle, grasped each of our heads between his hands, and kissed us. That's something I never experienced from any arresting officer in the United States. She got on the bus. The group traveled to Baghdad. Iraqi officials took Boylan and other members of the group to a hospital where she saw injured soldiers and civilians and to neighborhoods devastated by bombing. But she also saw mothers taking walks with children and shops with counters of fresh produce and other food. The activists were shown a bombed factory, which U.S. military briefers said was a chemical weapons plant, but which the activists say made milk for babies. In fact, I heard something interesting the other day. Some of you may have heard it as well, that Nestle's is confirming that it was a factory for baby milk, and as you may well know, Nestle has been in the business of providing baby milk, in quotes, to third world countries. So it's kind of ironic that we would be looking upon them as a source of valid information, but the jury's still out on that one. Anyway, the group stayed at the Al-Rashid Hotel, spending nights in the basement shelter. One night a bomb fell less than a mile away, shaking the building, Borland said. Borland, who arrived at a hotel in Amman with the equivalent of $13, said she would return home to hold Thursday vigils at the Hempstead Armed Forces Recruitment Office and wants to start another peace camp on the steps of the Capitol in Washington. We are trying to wire $500 over to her through former U.S. Attorney General Ramsey Clark's office, said Bill Brizzotti, a friend who works with Borland at the Wyandanche shelter. We are trying to work out an earlier flight than the 9th, which is the next available flight on the airline they have been working with. If it were up to Kathy Borland, she would still be camped on the Saudi border. I am not cavalier about my life, she said, but I had this message for both sides. If you come here to kill people, you'll have to kill Kathy Borland, too. That article came from today's Newsday. And I know there's a lot of people out there that would think that that kind of behavior is detrimental to this nation. What do you think? You think being an activist and putting your life on the line to stand up for peace, is that anti-American? Is that cowardice? If it is, let's find out why. You know, I'd like to know. I'd like to hear from people. If it isn't, I'd like to find out why, too. Give us a call, 632-6901, and we'll hash it out on the air, as we've done so many times before and so many times in the future. But each time we do it, it's slightly different, you know. I passed by the Hazeltine demonstration yesterday. Always make a point of, if you can't go to a demonstration yourself, at least try to pass by and show some support by, you know, beeping or, you know, waving, something like that, without getting into an accident, of course. And I saw a crowd of people there, but I think I saw even more police than there were people. I saw about 50 people and about 10 police cars, a police van, you know, all those special vehicles they only bring out when there's trouble. And it looked like they were just gathering on the front lawn, but apparently Hazeltine said they were trespassing. According to today's Newsday, three peace activists demonstrating against the Gulf War at the Hazeltine Corporation in Hopog were arrested for trespassing yesterday after they allegedly began hammering cardboard tombstones and crosses into the sod on company property. Good gosh. The three were among 35 people who marched along Comac Road in front of the plant, some chanting "No Blood for Oil," and watched by as many as 20 police officers. "We're trying to wake people up," one of those arrested, Mary Jane Helrick, 72 years old, of Northport, shouted as they were taken into custody. "For God's sake, wake up. These people are dying for corruption," meaning U.S. troops overseas, and I imagine all the people that U.S. troops are bombing as well, and people being bombed everywhere over there now. The arrests came on a day when, elsewhere, East Hampton Town board members bickered over a resolution supporting U.S. actions in the conflict, while Nassau police issued a terrorism hotline number. I'll give you that number in just a minute, if you know of any terrorists in your neighborhood, you need to report them. Hazeltine, an electronics manufacturing firm with a number of Defense Department contracts, includes components for the Patriot missile among its products. Arrested there yesterday along with Helrick of, I don't want to give out their, why did they give out their home street addresses here? I don't understand that. But the other people arrested were Joe Paparato of Ronkonkoma, Roger Snyder of Port Jefferson. They were released for appearance in First District Court in March. Okay, now for all you people looking for terrorists, the number to call is 573-7717. That's right, it's a 24-hour hotline number, and while there have been no confirmed reports of terrorism, police are simply taking precautionary measures. So, 573-7717 if you know of any terrorist activities, or maybe if you're planning terrorist activities, you should check with them first to make sure it's okay. That's a stupid thing I can never figure out, you know, is this terrorism scare. You know, you can't make an appointment with terrorism, right? I mean, isn't the whole purpose of terrorism to surprise people? You know, to sort of jump out from behind the bushes and go, boo. That's like where it all starts, and it sort of builds from there until you're like jumping out from the bushes and shooting people. But the whole point is, you don't tell them. You don't say, hey, I'm going to jump out from the bushes and do this on this particular day and time. You know, terrorists rely on surprise. So it's kind of crazy to expect terrorism everywhere you look. It's sort of self-defeating, too. I mean, putting all these restrictions on ourselves, closing things, canceling things, and just creating an overall atmosphere of fear, suspicion, and hatred, which I suppose is all well and good in times of war, but I don't think it's going to do us any good whatsoever. What else? This was in yesterday's paper. Article by Linder Weiner. The stage is set for the war censors. Yeah, censorship. That's kind of the theme of this war, too. News you may or may not want to know is not the only communication being censored in the war. Now listen to this. In England, BBC Radio actually put together an advisory list of 67 questionable songs that executives think might offend listeners during the fighting. Now, what do you think those songs are? Okay, let's go through a couple of the titles here. Such subversive titles as Killing Me Softly, Walk Like an Egyptian. Walk Like an Egyptian? Waterloo, I Shot the Sheriff. Suicide is Painless, The Israelites, Sonny and Cher's Bang Bang, and yes, Give Peace a Chance. And Imagine also made the list because a BBC executive told the LA Times, I think there's a line there that says, imagine there's no conflict or imagine there's no war. Ban that sucker. Meanwhile, closer to home, artists and entertainers are trying to assess the effect of the war on culture and how America thinks they should behave. Comedians are worrying about what's funny. CBS can't decide whether to ship out Major Dad. Most activist actors are loath to question the war lest they damage their careers as the Gulf's Jane Fonda. And probably Joan Baez as well. The country, primed by 18 months of arts censorship controversies and the strange new sensitivity that will not tolerate diversity, is in no mood for inquiry. A new Times Mirror poll says 57% of the country favors greater military control of the news. Woody Harrelson, he's the guy that plays the dim, sweet bartender on Cheers. Well, he was uninvited to be Grand Marshal of a New Orleans Carnival parade Wednesday because he participated in a student anti-war sit-in at UCLA last week. And Margot Kidder was hung out to dry last week for remarks she made at a demonstration outside the UN. She even got a fax from London with a headline saying, Superman's gal supports the Iraqis. You know, it's interesting because I heard what she said. I listened to her on the radio, and what she said made a lot of sense to me. Basically, she could not believe the outcry about the POWs in Iraq. And, you know, you make rules for war. You know, and she spoke about this in kind of a third-person detached voice, which I thought was very appropriate. It's like, you make these rules, you fight these wars, you make it legal to bomb cities, destroy homes, kill thousands of people, but it's impermissible to ridicule a soldier who gets caught for doing that. Yeah, it's so completely insane. By making rules of war, you know, you're justifying war. You're making war into this gentleman's game. Well, war is not a gentleman's game. It's barbarism, to say the least of it. But those remarks of Margot Kidder got her on the target, I guess, for quite a few groups. She's going to find it rather hard. But if more people speak out, if more people have the guts to say the things she did, that might change. Okay, Susan Sarandon, Tim Robbins, and Richie Havens were at the demonstration in Washington on Saturday. I was there, too. I'll tell you about it in a couple of minutes. Joan Baez sang in San Francisco. And 125 New York writers and artists are expected at a Stop the War festival at Theater for the New City, though the biggest names seem to be Allen Ginsberg and the Ridiculous Theater Company. But mostly there is silence. And, you know, I think that's kind of reflective. Look at our phone lines. Our phone lines are silent. They're empty. Blank. Nobody's calling up. There's silence. Silence. I don't know sign language, Bill. Bill wants to say something. Go ahead, say it.
What? WUSB, Stony Brook.
Oh, a legal ID. I can say a legal ID, Bill. I mean, I would have gotten to that. You're supposed to say a legal ID when the programming has a break. I've broken up my whole chain of thought here. Yeah, we're talking about silence. Okay. Silence from, you know, the public people. The people who can say things. Although more entertainers have turned into social activists lately, few are daring to speak out about this one. Even entertainers who might have been expected to question the war are working overtime to publicize their support of the troops. And, of course, one thing that I think has come out of all this, I'm sort of lapsing away from the article here occasionally, we realize that by supporting the troops doesn't necessarily mean we support the war. You know, and everybody sort of assumes that if you don't support the war, you don't support the troops. And that's the biggest crock I have heard in a long, long time, because I think for you to go out there and demonstrate for peace, you're showing that you care about people, all people, a lot more. You know, people are not expendable, and they should not be sacrificed for some stupid policy. And yes, this is a stupid policy. I mean, I cannot be convinced, no matter how many arguments I get into, and boy, I've gotten into a lot of arguments over the past couple of weeks, I cannot be convinced that this fight is for anything remotely having to do with freedom or democracy. You know, people say, your right to demonstrate, that's what they're over there fighting for. That is bull. That is not what they're over there fighting for. I mean, Iraq and Kuwait are not threatening our right to demonstrate in Washington, D.C. What they're threatening is perhaps, raising the price of oil a little bit, you know? Nothing more than that. And there's very few people that will say they support Saddam Hussein or will support what he's done. But, I don't know. I think it's very hypocritical to say that this is a fight for freedom, because Kuwait was a very despotic regime as well as Iraq. It's hard to tell the difference, in fact, except for the amazingly different ways of life they had in the streets. You know, one was rich and one was poor. Anyway, continuing with this article here, I do mean to finish it. Robin Williams, Barbara Streisand have taped greetings to soldiers in Saudi Arabia. The Show Coalition, an L.A. group that invites experts to speak to entertain people, plans a Persian Gulf forum next month. But an assistant to Ed Asner told the conservative Mooney-owned Washington Times that everyone's being real careful to make the distinction, because people automatically say, if you're anti-war, you're not supporting the boys, and that's not it. It's being portrayed as un-American to be against the war. And as Ed Asner knows, unpopular opinions can be hazardous to healthy careers. Randy Newman has rushed out an anti-war song and joined Sean Lennon's remake of Give Peace a Chance. A more typical Hollywood story, however, is Cher letting 24 technicians into her Malibu house last Saturday while she hosted a two-hour video collection of 22 songs to be seen over Armed Forces radio and TV services. She had a giant American flag inside her entryway and smaller flags in her gym. And there are obvious effects of the war on the arts. The war costs money. The arts need money. People feel poor. They don't buy tickets. People feel sad. They don't go out. Tourists are scared. They don't travel. In London, where the threat of terrorism is felt to be greater, there is the added expense of search and frisk security in West End theaters. Rumors were denied this week that the new Peter Sellers, John Adams opera, The Death of Klinghoffer, might not open in Brussels in March because of security fears. Given its subject, the terrorist attack on the cruise ship Achille Lauro, concerns are understandable. ABC has canceled or postponed two episodes of its undercover series. One dealt with the kidnapping by pro-Palestinian terrorists. The other was the second half of a drama about Iraqi germ warfare. Co-producer Bill Broyles Jr., the former journalist who also created China Beach, told the LA Times he didn't want to use the C word, that's censorship, but the network gave in to pressure and fear. I've been to war for this country as a Marine in Vietnam, 1969 to 70, and I think What they're fighting for now and what everybody thinks Americans should be fighting for is the right to see these things and make up their minds for themselves. I don't think this is either fanning the flames of war or mocking those who have gone to war. And Linda Weiner writes, I don't know about Broyles' episodes, but I do know about the pressure and fear. The Metropolitan Opera didn't play any German composers during World War I and stopped Madame Butterfly after Pearl Harbor. We scoff at such decisions as naive and misdirected now, but the stage has been well set here for overreactions. And I can imagine that. That article came from yesterday's Newsday. Article by Linda Weiner. The stage is set for the war censors. And the censorship goes well beyond the footage that we see coming out. You know, that standard pool footage that everybody gets the same story. So, you know, I think it's also hit Newsday. I don't know if somebody could verify this for me, but I've noticed that that they've stopped running Doonesbury in Newsday. At least they've stopped running the current ones. They're suddenly gone to repeats. And I just can't imagine them suddenly going to repeats when it seemed like they were doing this whole big Gulf War thing. So if anybody out there knows something about the whole Doonesbury affair, please call in and tell us, because we do need to know these things. All right. Let's get some calls in here. We've got one caller on the line, but I want to see five callers on the line because we have five lines. Our number is 632-6901. We're going to go into the Citizen Action Update. When we come back, we'll either go to the phones if there's enough calls, or we'll go back to a couple more pieces here that we have plenty of. So do give us a call. Let us know what you think of this whole Gulf War thing and what you think of the reaction at home. Is it zealotry? Is it simply patriotism? And what about all those people who keep complaining and never seem to stop? 632-6901. This is the Gulf War Citizen Action Update, heard every hour on the hour on WUSB Stony Brook. On Monday, February 4th at 6 p.m., there will be a meeting at the Graduate Student Organization in the Senate Meeting Room at the Stony Brook campus in a building called Central Hall on the second floor. That meeting is taking place by the Stony Brook Coalition for Peace in the Middle East. And again, that's Monday, February 4th at 6 p.m., Central Hall, Graduate Student Organization, Senate Meeting Room. There will be a speakout on Wednesday, February 6th at 12:30 p.m. in front of the Administration Building. And on Monday, February 11th, a teach-in is scheduled. Stay tuned for further information on that. There will be a rally in support of U.S. troops in the Persian Gulf on Wednesday, February 13th at 12:30 p.m. That will be at the Fine Arts Plaza at the Stony Brook campus. That's sponsored by the Stony Brook Commuter College. If you're interested in finding out news from Israel as news comes in, you can call the Israel line, which is updated by the Consulate General of Israel in New York every day. Their phone number is 212-351-5333. Some other phone numbers that may be of interest: the Coalition for Peace in the Middle East, 516-689-7290. The Long Island Council of Churches, 727-2210. And the Long Island Families Desert Shield Support Group, 741-4454. If you need to find out the address or telephone number of any elected official, you can call the League of Women Voters. Their Long Island number is 516-549-4171. In Connecticut, they can be reached at 203-288-7996. The Gulf War Citizen Action Update is heard every hour on the hour on WUSB Stony Brook. If you have information that you would like to pass along to us, or if you have any comments regarding this service, please call us at 516-632-6498. Those who are curious, that's George Winston doing variations on Pachelbel's Canon. It's 11 minutes after 11 o'clock here on WUSB in Stony Brook, and we are taking phone calls at 632-690.1 as we shut George Winston up there. I want to give a try to that Israeli hotline just to see what it sounds like, and we'll give out the number to that again. Again, let's get a couple more calls in here. We do have some open lines, and I know there's lots of people out there that want to talk about this because they always are stopping me on the street. Well, here's your chance to stop me on the proverbial electronic street. Here we go.
This is Israel Line, the news service of the Consulate General of Israel in New York. This is a special update, 9:30, Saturday, February 2nd. The Israel Defense Forces spokesman announced that a Scud missile was launched from western Iraq toward Israel at 1:30 a.m. Israel time, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It was the second missile launched today. There were no casualties and no damage was caused by this missile, which was armed with a conventional warhead. The missile fell in central Israel. For security and operational reasons, the Israel Defense Forces is providing as little information as possible on the locations of Iraqi missile attacks on Israel. Israel Radio reports that this Scud missile was the 30th launched at Israel since the Gulf War began, and this was the 10th time Iraq has attacked Israel. Israel Radio also reports that the Saudis are taking part in the attacks against missile launchers in western Iraq. According to Israel Radio, Saudi Arabia is apparently also endangered by these launchers. This has been Israel Line. The next schedule edition will be at 1 p.m. on Monday. However, there will be special updates as breaking news warrants it. On behalf of the Consulate General of Israel in New York, this is Myra Cohen. Shalom.
Yes, okay. Well, that's... Oh, wow. Hey, that's pretty cool. What are they doing in that thing? Apparently it's some kind of a machine there. Hold on, let me hit a key. Oh, my God. I can hack this thing. I'm not going to do anything to it, but... Boy. Oh, boy. I wouldn't have a remotely programmable thing giving out information like that. But in any event, the telephone number, don't hack it, folks. Don't hack it. Listen to it. Is 212-351-5333. And that will give you updated information on things from the Israeli perspective, which so far my heart goes out to that particular corner of the world as well. But I have to say... The response, or the lack of response from there, has, in this particular case, been a good thing, you know. Sort of like what Saddam Hussein is doing by kind of confounding everybody. Nobody knows why he's responding the way he is. Well, it's a taste of their own medicine, sort of, by not retaliating, by just being silent and knowing that something will happen in the future. At the same time, though, you know, I think this would be a golden opportunity for somebody to come up and say, hey, you know, it's time to solve this Palestinian issue. Now, this has got nothing to do And why should it? It's got nothing to do with the Gulf crisis. Let's just work on the Palestinian issue. You know? Now, what are we going to do? Are we going to say, no, we can't do that because we're still punishing Saddam Hussein? Well, if we say that, are we not linking it to the war? You know, it seems like we're doing exactly what we say we're not going to do. If we refuse to talk about that, then we're linking it. So, let's talk about it. And let's forget about linking it to the war in any way, shape, or form. Maybe something good will come of it in the war, but that should not be the point of doing it in the first place. Just an idea, just a thought. Okay, let's take some phone calls. 632-6901. And whatever your views, feel free to call. Let's just respect one another's differences. That's one thing that I think a lot of people are slowly learning. You know, we all have different ways of coming across this, but it's not right to accuse people of being anti-American, unpatriotic, dangerous minds, that kind of thing. It's, you know, it's the argument of somebody who's losing to say something like that. So respect people who have different opinions. Don't intimidate them. That's one thing that I know a lot of people who are against the war are complaining about is intimidation. It's kind of hard to speak your mind when everybody's waving flags and demanding blood. We shouldn't be doing that. We shouldn't be demanding blood. We should be supporting our troops, but not with the vigor of a football crowd. It's not the same thing. 632-6901. Good evening.
Hi, it's Andrew Goldberg.
Why are you always the first person to call?
I'm sorry. You want me to hang up?
No. As long as you're on the line, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I was trying to think, you know, this past week about why, you know, a reason that Saddam Hussein is wrong. And he gave me one earlier this week with the pollution of, you know, the Persian Gulf. So
the oil spill.
Yeah. So
right.
I just wanted to know, you know, what you think about that.
Well, I mean, I think the oil spill is a horrible thing, and that's probably one of the most horrible things to come out of this. But I can't say I'm surprised. I mean, did he not say he was going to do exactly that kind of thing and will continue to do exactly that kind of thing?
Right. I think he mentioned that he was going to, blow up Kuwait's oil fields and cause, massive pollution throughout the Northern Hemisphere.
You see, the guy is desperate. He's being backed into a corner. And, you know, I don't know if you tried this recently, but if you back a dog into a corner, a rabid dog preferably, he will react most viciously when there is no way for him to get out.
Right.
Try it out. You know, get a rabid dog, Andrew, and see for yourself. The dog will respond in a most unreasonable way, but you know, anybody with common sense will know not to do that, will know not to back a rabid dog into a corner. And we've known this for a long period of time. It seems like we've wanted to back him into a corner for quite a while. I sort of realized over the past couple of days that we've actually built Saddam Hussein up twice. We've built him up over the years by making him this well-stocked military madman, as we like to call him now. We've also built him up over the last 6 months by making him into this threat to the United States, when actually all he is a two-bit dictator like anybody else over there.
Right.
And quite a few over here, too.
Also, his fortress that he has under his presently blown up palace is pretty strong, and I heard it's going to take a whole lot of artillery fire to, you know, open up that door that he has.
Well,
you know,
I'll
it's like a whole palace underneath the palace, and that's where he's sending out his messages.
Let me just say one thing, Andrew. We have the CIA. We have the KGB, we've got the Israeli Secret Service, we've got all these underground groups that can do just about anything except work for peace, it seems, all on the same side for once. Now, you're telling me that for however amount of money that we've spent so far, which is tens of billions of dollars, we can't off this one guy? You know, I'm not for that, but I'm certainly not for a war. And if it comes down to the lesser of two evils, I would have to say, you know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
So you're saying that
I'm saying I'm surprised they haven't done that. And I think the reason they haven't done that is because a war is something that is seen as advantageous for many reasons.
Would rather have Saddam Hussein not dead than dead?
I say that again?
You would rather have Saddam Hussein alive than dead?
Well, I'm not for killing people, but I'm saying if it comes down to a choice between killing one person and killing tens of thousands of them...
He's not a person. He's Saddam Hussein.
He's not a person. Okay, fine. Have it your way.
Well, you think he should just, like, be convicted of something and just serve life in prison or something?
Well, I don't know. I mean...
What would you think would be a suitable punishment for Saddam Hussein
that have the right to try him are his people, obviously, because if a crime has been committed, it's been committed over there. Has not been committed over here. He has not done anything to us. He's done things to his own people. And they're the ones that have to overthrow him and try him and do all kinds of other sadistic things to him if they shall choose. You know, that's their right. And I don't think it's our right. You know, over the last year now, we've used the excuse of a madman to invade two countries, first Noriega in Panama, and now Saddam Hussein in Iraq. It's always, you know, we're not fighting the people, we're just fighting this one guy, and sorry, guys, we got to invade your country just to get this one guy out. I don't buy that. You know, I don't think one person can have that much, can build up that much of a wall and make it so impossible for anybody to get to him that he creates this entire conflict. Either the conflict is a lot deeper than that, which so far I haven't seen evidence to that, or we're manufacturing a lot of it to bolster quote-unquote patriotism and maybe help the economy out by having a nice, healthy war, which we're sure to win in the end anyway.
Right. Can you give that address out for the Dan Quayle newsletter?
Dan Quayle newsletter. Yeah, if you talk for a second while I go back and get it, just say something for about 5 seconds.
Okay. USB 90.1.
That was great, Andrew. Wonderful. You really have a talent for being on the radio. Okay, here is the address. Get your pens ready. The Quayle Quarterly, P.O. Box 8593, and that's in Brewster Station in Bridgeport, Connecticut, over the puddle there. Zip code 06605.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks for calling, Andrew.
Oh, bye.
And Andrew, of course, is one of our regular callers, who I believe has been calling since the first episode of Brain Damage years ago. 632-6901 is our telephone number. Good evening.
Hello. Can I talk?
go ahead. Well, it sounds like you can talk just fine. Except you're in delay, so you might get confused if you hear the radio.
I can hear you.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I've been reading the newspaper here. And it says, Brooklyn, anyone knowledgeable about Iraq history understands the Iraqis have reasons to be harsh towards the English and the Americans during the Gulf crisis. Kuwait was the seaport for Iraq. It was part of Basra province, just as New York City is part of New York State. In fact, there was never a border between Kuwait and the rest of Iraq until 1924, when England refused to permit its protectorate to reunite with then English mandate of Iraq. Frankly, if more people knew the accurate history of the Middle East, the U.S. would not be in Iraq to begin with.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot...
Don't switch fight. Excuse me?
There's a lot that people don't know about Iraq and...
Well, there are a lot that people don't know about this country, like the fact that a lot of the weapons that we sent there were sent over, you know, for Iraq... to vanquish Iran.
Exactly, yeah. We took the side of Iraq in that war. Of course, they didn't stop us from selling arms to Iran as well.
Right, so when they started losing money on the war, the United States says, hey, don't screw around with Iran anymore. They don't have anything you want. They don't have anything we want. Go into Iraq, stimulate our economy, stimulate your economy, and if you die, you become a hero in your people's eyes. If we kill you, George Bush becomes a hero in our eyes. If you win... You didn't have anything to lose to begin with. I mean, we're talking about millions and millions of people against one guy, all right, against this little tiny country that has been a part of Iraq since before English people even stopped wearing skins.
Now, that, you know, I don't want to justify his marching in there or anything like that, but I'm just saying, you know, if how many people know... who the ruler of Iraq was, where Kuwait was a year ago, you know, 2 years ago. Nobody knew.
The thing is, nobody really cared.
Nobody cared, but the thing is, it's been brought out to our attention now. We could do the same thing with Assad of Syria. We could say he's the biggest enemy. We could do the same thing with Gaddafi.
Exactly.
We could have done the same thing.
The thing is, also there, I mean, most of the people in this country are Christians, all right? And, you know, we have this distorted view of the Islamic religion, and the whole concept behind this war isn't just a war against Saddam Hussein, because let me tell you something, after this war is over, whether we win, whether the Iraqis win, we're still going to have problems and social rifts between us and the people who are quote-unquote allied with us. Okay, Israel, as far as I'm concerned, doesn't have anything to do with this war. All right, Iraq's making this point so that they can, they're using propaganda the same way we are, and It doesn't really make a lot of sense for us to, you know, say, well, you know, this guy is a madman and all this other stuff. Hey, he was a madman. Fidel Castro's a madman. Manuel Noriega's a madman. There are people who we put in office who are madmen, like that guy over in the Philippines. We put him in office, all right? We put Manuel Noriega in office. George Bush, who was the head of the CIA, all right, put these people and says, yeah, we're gonna do this for you. We're gonna, you know, send money to your country and all this other stuff. But as soon as they start to do a little bit too much for themselves, then it's time to tighten up the straps, tighten up the rope around their neck, which we put around their neck anyway in good faith.
That's it. Yeah, that's exactly it. As soon as the teacher's pet starts talking back, all of a sudden, you know, he's the biggest enemy in the class.
Exactly.
And that's, you know, I was talking to somebody last week who pointed it out in rather a scary way. All we have to do is demonize Castro.
Right.
And we can invade Castro like that.
Right.
You know, and exactly, that can happen tomorrow.
Exactly.
We could have gone to war 10 years ago with Iran for the same reasons.
Right.
They were a threat to us then. They could control oil. They could do all kinds of horrible things to Americans. And maybe they were even more of a threat than Iraq was to America directly.
Well, you know, I don't think that anybody is a threat to America except maybe the Pentagon. The Pentagon, all right, George Bush, and the media, which is definitely government mandated. I mean, if you listen to any radio-free radio station or any cable access television station, the opinions there contrast so greatly with the ones that are on, you know, your major networks, all right, and your commercial network stations, you know, and I don't understand this. They want popular opinion to be behind this war. Yet, you know, Vietnam was started in 1942, which a lot of people don't realize, okay? And popular opinion was behind it until people started coming home and saying, you should see the horrible things that are happening over there.
Which, of course, we can't really see now that everything is going through one correspondent.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, you know, I'm sure if I was a non-commercial correspondent and I was going to go over there and give my own perspective of it, I wouldn't be allowed. You know, they wouldn't even allow me to have a press pass.
See, it's my hope that CBS crew is not in fact hiding from the bombing so much as hiding from the censors, and that one day they'll surface with the true story as to what's going on.
The truth about this war isn't going to come out until after the war is over with, after they've gone in there and sifted through the charred bodies and you know, buried all the elderly men, women, and children over in Iraq, because I think eventually we want Kuwait, all right? We want Kuwait. We do not want Kuwait to be under the control of any Arab nation except Arab nations that are friendly to the United States. I mean, that's why we're still down in Panama. The issues weren't whether or not Manuel Noriega had anything to do with the Medellin drug cartel up in Colombia. That had nothing to do with it, all right? Because George Bush knew about all of that stuff years before we even went after the man.
Quite true.
All right? Now, we went down there. Noriega was our excuse to get back the Panama Canal, so we don't have to give it back in 10 years. All right? Saddam Hussein is our excuse to go over there and occupy Kuwait.
Well, we're talking about a permanent presence.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what do you think? After this war, we're going to go back and go out and say, well, it's all yours now? Hell no, man. We're in there to stay until the Kuwaitis decide that they don't want us there anymore. And guess who they're going to ask to help move us out? The Iraqis.
Now, you know, one thing, though, I think our biggest enemy is not necessarily those people.
It's not them over there. It's right here in this country.
Well, yeah,
it's people who are feeding us the
lies. I heard what you said before.
Who are perpetrating our sense of Americanism, our sense of
okay,
I don't know what else to call it, but it's anti-Arabic.
Uh-huh. Certainly. But rather than say, you know, these entities, these people are the enemies, I think our biggest enemies are ourselves for allowing ourselves to be caught up in this. Because if we're not caught up in this, if we don't fall for it hook, line, and sinker and go out and have hate rallies and all that kind of thing, then they're powerless. They're completely powerless. The power of the people is what predominates in this kind of a society. But we have to realize that for it to work.
Well, you know, it's strange that you should say that. That's true. But, you know, as long as we are on top of the world, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
okay, that's always going to be something that's going to be a factor in our lives. We are going to have to agree with and stand behind everything our government tells us. Otherwise, whatever they tell us is not going to wash, and we are not going to support it. There wouldn't be anybody joining the Army. There wouldn't be anybody joining the Navy, the Air Force, and the Marines. Okay, we have to have that. We have to have that.
You know,
unfortunate thing is most of the people in this country are so uninformed about the whole situation, you know. And I also think that there are a lot of people who want war, all right? I mean, when we took hostages over in, not us, but when there were hostages taken over in Lebanon,
mm-hmm.
right, there were a lot of people who said, go over there, bomb them. And when they bombed them, oh, we're so happy that they bombed them. When we found out that Manuel Noriega was allowing cocaine to be smuggled through Panama, the first thing we said was, go down, bomb Panama, take it over, get rid of Manuel Noriega.
There's a need to bomb places, I know. It's a human need, I think, to bomb things.
Exactly, but the funny thing is, up here in the United States, there are people who use cocaine, and the same people who might use cocaine could be the same people who are saying, yeah, go get Noriega. All right, they got Noriega. Cocaine still cheap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yeah, and I mean, you know, it's an unbelievable situation over there. I am not pro war. I am not anti war. I mean, I look at it like this: whether I agree with what's going on over there or not, it's not going to stop it from happening. You know what I mean?
Well, it's not going to stop it, but every person will make a difference speaking out in some way.
Every person will make a difference, but you have to understand that the majority, George Bush is our president, all right? There are a lot of people out there who voted for George Bush. In fact, I would say the majority of the people who voted for George Bush, all right, also support this war. But they support a lot of other controversial issues in this country. The funny thing is, let them have their butts over there, or their sons, or their daughters, all right? Because the people who are for this war stand the most to gain monetarily from it, all right? Now, you let them be over there, their sons, their daughters, be over there in a position. That's why I can honestly say that, hey, man, it's not just us saying, well, you know, because if it stimulates our economy, it must stimulate the Iraqi economy for the simple fact that their economy is based on Western philosophies now. They don't have their own philosophies. I mean, it all revolves around oil, okay? And oil is something that everybody in the world needs for transportation, for heating, just about everything that we base our lives on,
mm-hmm.
and our economies on, has to do with oil.
Oil is the blood of our society, I guess.
Well, it's the blood of our society in a way. It's the blood of their society, because Saddam Hussein is saying, okay, our country is poor. We have a very low income per capita. Okay? Now, if we take over Kuwait, it'll boost our gross national product. It'll boost our economy. It'll do massive. And basically, all the guy is doing is taking back a part of Iraq that once was a part of Iraq. All right? I mean, the Kuwaiti, I don't really see that much of a difference in that area. I mean, all of those people are basically the same people. 5,000 years ago, they were all members of the Persian Empire.
Uh-huh.
Okay? You know, they were all Babylonians, you know, and these, they all shared the same, they all have the same religion and things like that. The unfortunate thing is the United States has had to make deals with them because, hey, our oil's too expensive for us to buy ourselves. And let's face it, we produce more oil than all of those countries combined. I mean, not only that, we could also buy cheap oil from Mexico.
Oh, there's no limit to the amount of things. Listen, sir, I want to get some more calls. Thanks so much for calling us, though, and keep thinking. Our number is 632-6901, area code 516. We do have a lot of calls here. But, you know, one thing that I do want to point out is, you know, by standing up for what you believe in, it's kind of like, you know, people accuse activists of being cowards. Oh, you won't go over there and spill your blood for oil. But believe me, it takes a lot of guts to stand up in your hometown, you know, in a demonstration or just to even stand up and say something in public or even, you know, in private in your family to stand up for what you believe in. That's supposed to be what this is all about. And if you have that much courage to do that, it's a good foundation for all kinds of other things. So it's wrong to assume somebody is a coward because they disagree with what you have to say and don't go with a party line, which unfortunately seems to be the pressure that's upon us now. Nowhere is that more evident than in the press. If you look in the newspaper, you will see very biased reporting. And I don't think you have to agree with one side or another to see that this is true. A good example is the demonstration in Washington, D.C. I was down there. There were at least 100,000 people down there, in my estimation. It's hard to estimate groups of people when you're on the ground. But we did have about 30 abreast marching past a particular point, and it took over 3 hours. So if somebody with a calculator wants to try to figure that out, it's more than the amount that the police said, which is nothing unusual. What was particularly disturbing, though, was if you looked in newspapers, you would see that, they gave coverage to this huge rally, which was the biggest anti-war rally in 20 or 30 years in Washington, D.C. And then on the page next to it, they would give just as much space to a couple of rallies that were held across the country that drew a couple of hundred people that were for the war. And while, you know, it's right to cover everything, surely 100,000 people is a bigger story than 100 people. I would expect that if it was 100,000 people marching for the war, I'd expect that to get more coverage than 100 people marching against the war. It just seems that there has been this this disproportionate effort to give equal time where there is not an equal event. And, you know, you'll find it if you look throughout the paper, this kind of they'll give out the phone numbers for all kinds of pro-war groups, but they won't give out phone numbers for anti-war groups. They'll tell you how to give blood to support the war, but they don't tell you how to give blood to fight AIDS. You know, things like that. It just it makes you realize that the press is taking the easy way out here, and people will speak out louder against those who are against the war rather than people speaking out against those who are for the war. You know, it hurts a lot more to be yelled at when you're against the war than when you're for the war because, you know, you're not accused of certain horrible things when you're for a war. For some reason, you're never accused of being unpatriotic or callous or cold-blooded. It just, it never is shown that way, and that simply is not fair. These are the kind of things that we have to look out for. These are the kind of things that we have to constantly be monitoring newspapers and all kinds of media to make sure that it is balanced, to make sure that they do cover things that are happening and don't make it seem one-sided, because it is not one-sided. We try to balance things here at USB, and it really should work the same in just about every other place. 632-6901 is our telephone number. Good evening.
Yeah, hi.
How you doing?
Who was that kid before? Like, Andy or whatever?
Andrew, yes. He's one of our regular callers.
Hey, you should name him Brain Damage.
Well, we were thinking of it.
Calls every week.
Well, you know, that's what most people do on a Saturday night. There's nothing to do on Long Island. You know that.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I'm going to have to talk about the war, because That's all you guys have been talking about for a while.
Well, don't you think it's an important issue? I mean, I know they stopped interrupting programs to tell you about bombing and things like that, but, you know, in some places it's not even the top story anymore.
Yeah, I know.
Well, it's wrong to forget, you know?
Yeah, but you can't let it bother you.
Yeah, you'd better let it bother you, because if you don't let it bother you, it's going to hit you personally at some point.
Oh, yeah, I think so, because if it goes on any longer, I think they might reinstate the draft or something like that.
Well, you know, I was talking to somebody about that, too, and they said that, and I think this makes a lot of sense, if this war ends, say, in the spring sometime or early summer,
mm-hmm.
They won't reinstitute the draft now, because that would lead to so much backlash from the public. But what they will do is reinstitute the draft after the war is over and say that, you know, this is for security purposes. And who is going to argue that at that point? And then we'll have a draft for the next war. Sorry? Excuse me?
What are you talking about? Reinstate the draft after the war is
going on? Yeah, and then have a military draft in effect when there is no war. Therefore, there won't be any demonstrations against it. And then when the next war comes around, it'll be too late to have any demonstrations.
Oh, I think people will still demonstrate against it, even...
But not as many. You see, if you institute a draft in the middle of a war, I think that's political suicide.
Yeah, because that's what brought Vietnam to an end. I think the people protesting...
Well, it's one of the things, you know?
Yeah. But I don't think we should have any protests against the war. I mean, they're already there. I think we should support them instead of protesting them.
Yeah, but if you don't agree that the war is just, what do you do?
I don't know. I don't think we even should have gone in there in the first place.
That's, you know, I find most people say that. Most people who say that we should support the troops now say we shouldn't have gone in there. And that's, you know, I guess you feel that it's too late to do anything else now. And that's what I don't agree with. I think it's never too late to stop a war.
I think we're sort of losing.
Why?
I don't know. We're sort of at his mercy.
Uh-huh.
Because there's no way we can atomic bomb them. Because all the outside nations we're friendly with
right.
get hit. And even if we can make something up, make a bomb up that would just hit Iraq, the fallout would hit everything else.
Well, I will agree with you. That is not the answer, yes.
But what do you suggest we do? Just keep fighting? Because the ground attack is pretty much hopeless. I think we're going to get beat on that.
Well, I think, you know, it's to everybody's interest to avoid the ground war. And unfortunately, we don't seem to be trying to do that very much. At this stage, I think we should be trying to figure out a way to make peace.
I don't think he's going to listen. I mean, he went in there thinking that this is do or die, this sudden death overtime, you know.
Well, maybe you strike up a strictly defensive pose. No more bombing raids into Iraq, but if he comes into Saudi Arabia, you stop him. Period.
I don't know.
And you continue the embargoes and make it impossible for him to do anything in his country until he lets go of Kuwait.
Yeah, but he's still going to try. He has something up his sleeve. I mean, he doesn't strike me as a stupid person.
Uh-huh.
I mean, like, crazy and insane, yeah, but I think he's got a plan going that's just going to affect us. Because the thing with the oil is just outrageous. Because do you see it on the TV?
Yeah. Yeah, the oil spill, you mean?
Yeah, like the ducks that are dying.
But did that really surprise you that happened?
That he did the oil?
Yeah, he said he was going to do something like that, and I believed him.
I never heard that until he did it. I mean, I guess you have to believe him, because he said he's going to attack Israel first, so I guess that's...
See, I don't think the guy is necessarily insane. I think he's desperate, and I think he will do things that desperate people do. And the more we back him into a corner, the more unreasonable he's going to get, and the more horrible things will happen.
So, if we catch him, let's say, can we do anything to him, or is it up to the people that are over there?
Well, that's something I really, you know, I don't know. I haven't really thought about what we would do if we caught him, but...
I wouldn't put him in jail or anything. I'd like to torture him a little bit.
Well, that's your personal wish there.
You wouldn't want to do that to him?
Well, I don't. I just got other things on my mind at the moment. I don't know if torturing is one thing that I want to try.
Well, he's caused so many problems.
Well, okay, what has he done? That's something I've been asking people this week. What has Saddam Hussein done? He's invaded Kuwait. Okay, what else?
I think he's caused a lot of worry around the United States about, you know, families of people over there that are over there now.
Well, yeah, but that's a result of us going in there. But what has he done?
Created a war? Can you say that?
Well, we've created a war too, right? I mean, it takes two to tangle.
He invaded a country, that's what he did.
He invaded a country. Hey, we invade countries all the time, right?
Yeah, but are they defenseless?
Oh, Panama is pretty defenseless, don't you think?
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I mean, I'm not equating the two here, but I'm just, you know, I'm playing devil's advocate here. It's important that you try to see things the way the other side sees them, and then maybe you'll understand. You know, like, I've got a book here. I've got the World Almanac, right?
Uh-huh.
And every country has a listing. And what I'm doing now is I'm looking up, if I can find the country section here, Iraq. Let's see what Iraq's vital statistics are. Okay, here we go. The gross national product, this is, the average salary, okay, the average yearly salary of a person in Iraq, do you know what it is?
No, do I know what it is?
Yeah.
No, not at all.
Okay, it's $1,950. That's as of last year, $1,950. Now let's go next door to Kuwait, okay, and see what their salary is there.
What?
Their salary is $10,410.
Oh.
So that's quite a disproportionate advantage there, you know, for a country that's so... now, you know, if you had even the slightest claim on Kuwait, like, you know, 100 years ago, Kuwait was a part of Iraq,
right,
and you were in Iraq now, wouldn't you sort of feel a resentment towards them? You know, I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's a proper thing to do. But if we can understand what is motivating him,
yeah,
we might be able to diffuse it somehow without resorting to this. Of course, it's kind of, you know, speaking after the fact. But
he's going to get some punishment for what he did. If he decides right now to say, yeah, I'll give up.
Well, I think he's been pretty punished. I mean, not him so much as the people of Iraq, certainly. And they're probably the ones that deserve it the least. I mean, they just went through an 8-year war with Iran.
Yeah, and they went right to this.
I mean, you know, do you think we are fighting the people of Iraq? I don't think we are.
No, I think we're fighting him.
And I've heard from people that have come from Baghdad that there is a surprising lack of bitterness towards the United States people.
Really?
So I don't think this is a war between the people, which, you know, is a good thing, obviously.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think there's some hatred towards the people over there.
Well, I think there's a lot more hatred here. I know of people who are Indian, you know, people who are Indian who wear turbans.
Yeah, and people make fun of them.
People are treating them like they're Iraqis.
Right.
And then you ask yourself, well, wait a minute, what if they were Iraqis? Is it right for you to treat them in that way, too? This is supposed to be a country where we tolerate differences.
Yeah, my friends do that. There's Indians walking around, and they'll call them towel heads and disposable diaper heads. And they're like, what do you have in your turban? You're hiding stuff in there.
Terrorist, right? Yeah.
And
it's not a very healthy atmosphere that we're creating over here, and that's, I think I'm even more concerned about that than I am about what's going on over there.
Yeah, that's true, but I don't think there's a lot of hate. I mean, not as much as other things, but
interesting. Well, we'll have to keep our eyes and ears on the situation, but
what are you going
to
be talking about for a while?
Well, I've only got 12 more minutes on the air.
No, I mean, not tonight, but like in future shows.
Well, you know, I don't want to fall into this where I just talk about one thing, but at the moment, you know, it's really on my mind a lot, and I think it's on everybody's mind. And if we start forgetting about it, then we sort of grow to accept it, and the war just becomes something like the sun rising every day.
Yeah.
And I don't want that to happen. I don't want the war to become something that, you know, is always there.
Right. Who's on next? At the...
You know, that's a very good question, because I don't know. I know Power Surge is no longer on. So I don't know who is on at 12 o'clock. I have no idea. So we're all going to be surprised in 11 minutes. But we're not going to be surprised before then, so don't do that. Okay, 632-6901. A couple other fun facts about Kuwait. Let's see what we got here. This, of course, was before the invasion. Kuwait is ruled by the Al Sabah dynasty, founded in 1759. Britain ran foreign relations and defense from 1899 until independence in 1961. The majority of the population is non-Kuwaiti, with many Palestinians, and the majority of the population cannot vote. No kidding, that's what it says right here. The majority of the population of Kuwait cannot vote. This was before the invasion. Oil, first exported in 1946, is the fiscal mainstay, providing most of Kuwait's income. Oil pays for free medical care, education, and social security. There are no taxes except customs duties. Kuwaiti oil tankers have come under frequent attack by Iran because of Kuwait's support of Iraq in the Iran-Iraq War. In July 1987, U.S. Navy warships began escorting Kuwaiti tankers in the Persian Gulf. Okay. Let's take a look at Iraq as well. All right, Mesopotamia, which is what Iraq used to be called, ceased to be a separate entity after the conquest of the Persians, Greeks, and Arabs. The latter founded Baghdad, from where the caliph ruled a vast empire in the 8th and 9th centuries. Mongol and Turkish conquests led to a decline in population, the economy, cultural life, and the irrigation system. Britain secured a League of Nations mandate over Iraq after World War I. Independence under a king came in 1932. A leftist pan-Arab revolution established a republic in 1958, which oriented foreign policy towards the USSR. Most industry has been nationalized and large land holdings broken up. A local faction of the International Ba'ath Arab Socialist Party has ruled by decree since 1968. Russia and Iraq signed an aid pact in 1972, and arms were sent along with several thousand advisors. The 1978 execution of 21 communists and a shift of trade to the West signaled a more neutral policy, straining relations with the USSR. In the 1973 Arab-Israeli War, Iraq sent forces to aid Syria. Within a month of assuming power, Saddam Hussein instituted a bloody purge in the wake of a reported coup attempt against the new regime. Years of battling with the Kurdish minority resulted in total defeat for the Kurds in 1975 when Iran withdrew support. Kurdish rebels continued their war. In 1979, fighting led to Iraqi bombing of Kurdish villages in Iran, causing relations with Iran to deteriorate. After skirmishing intermittently for 10 months over the sovereignty of the disputed Shatt al-Arab waterway that divides the two countries, Iraq and Iran entered into open warfare. That lasted for quite a while. Israeli airplanes destroyed a nuclear reactor near Baghdad on June 7, 1981, claiming that it could be used to produce nuclear weapons. Okay, well, that's pretty much what's going on in that fiery part of the world. Let's go back to the phone, 632-6901. Good evening.
Yeah, how you doing?
Okay.
If there's a draft, I just want to talk about this. If there's a draft, do you think we should send the crackheads and empty out the prisons?
Send the crackheads. Well,
I mean, they're all screwed up as is anyway. I'm like, why not draft them and send them over there?
Well, just what is your definition of what a soldier is? Just a body?
Well,
or somebody that is able to do something?
See, with all the problems that we have here with drugs and crack and everything, why not send some of them over there?
Well, it's an interesting question. I'm sure it's one that George Bush is thinking seriously of, but. I don't know. I have problems thinking about things like that. That's crazy. I mean, yeah, God forbid we help out the people that have drug problems, right? Maybe stop them from having drug problems by stopping them from getting started on drugs in the first place. You know, we see penalties for using drugs, but we don't see ways of avoiding using drugs in the first place. Well, 632-6901. Good evening.
Hey, yo, Eric.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's up? Who the hell was that kid sending the crackheads?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what's coming out of our schools these days.
They won't do nothing. They'll just sit on the front line and get shot, and then, yeah, that's really good.
Well, what do you think all you people that get drafted are going to do? You know, that's,
Oh, no. If I get drafted, I'm gonna fight. I'm some crackhead just going to sit there.
Are you going to fight the draft? You're going to fight
what am I doing here?
What?
I'm going to wake up dead.
Uh-huh.
That kid doesn't know what he's talking about. And people are talking about sending the AIDS patients over there.
I haven't heard anybody talking about this except here, so I take it with a big grain of salt.
I think they should send all the garbage barges over there and just dump it on them.
There's a novel approach.
They smell like crap anyway. So
fight fire with garbage. Yeah, I like it.
Do you think that's a good idea?
Well, it's a better idea than sending crack people over there, that's for sure.
Yeah, because... That's not good.
No.
How was your D.C. trip that you took?
D.C. was very inspiring. I'll tell you one thing about going to something like that, you know.
Yes?
Before you go and see 100,000 people marching, supporting peace,
huh?
You think that, you know, by supporting peace yourself, you're kind of like an outcast and you should keep quiet and you shouldn't talk out too much because most people don't agree with you. I'm sorry?
Did you talk out at all?
Well, just by being there, you're talking out.
Oh, all right.
But you see...
All right.
But when you go there, you realize there's people from all over the country, and, you know, they're not crazy people. They're like rational housewives, you know, regular people that you'd see in the street every day.
Yes.
They just happen to agree with you. And when you realize there are so many of them,
uh-huh.
you suddenly lose the fear of speaking out and being public about, you know, how you feel. And I think that's very important for people to do. There should be more such things. And I don't think it's unhealthy at all. I think it's very healthy for people to express themselves.
Find anything interesting over there?
Well, nothing I didn't really already know, but I think that was the high point for me, is just seeing all the people that were there.
Yeah. Who was that lady that took over for you, Cindy?
Cindy was on the air last week. Yeah, I don't know. What did she do? Did she do anything interesting?
Well, she was crazy. She didn't have a delay.
Uh-huh.
People on there cursing. It was pretty funny.
Well, Cindy never has a delay with anything.
I picture her as a fat slob. That's what somebody told me she was, because she makes fun of some of the callers.
Fat slob.
Yeah, that's what somebody told me. She's short and fat.
Short and fat. Not our Cindy.
No,
no, no.
Well,
no.
What does she do at the station? What does she?
You've never seen some of our pictures of Cindy, have you?
Well, why, is she real hot?
Well, we sell them for $5.
$5?
$7.50 with an autograph. But thanks for your interest. We got to move on. 632-6901. Good evening.
How you doing?
Okay. How are you?
Have you been talking to anyone named Jason Tannenbaum tonight?
I don't know. Good evening.
Yeah, what would you do if you were drafted?
Well, that's a good question. What would I do if I was drafted? Well, first of all, I missed the registration. I'm kind of upset by this, actually. I missed the registration period by 14 days. If I was born 14 days earlier, no, I'm sorry, 14 days later, I would be eligible to register. And I would refuse to register because I don't believe in mandatory military service in a democracy where you're supposed to have freedom of choice as to things like that, you know? And I would object to it because I wouldn't want to be dragged into a war that, you know, was not a just war, as I believe this war is not a just war.
Right. Oh, how old are you?
Well, let's just say I'm a little above the age. I don't want to give out exact details. It's a little above the age of, that they want me. But I understand that they would call me anyway if it was a big enough war.
Right.
So I don't feel too left out.
Yeah, well, what if you had no choice and you had to go over there?
Well, I don't know what you mean by have no choice.
You know, like, what are you going to do? Are you going to run from the draft?
I don't run from things.
Be a conscientious objector.
I'd stand up and speak out against it and take the penalties. And I think, you know, that takes a certain amount of guts, too, to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people are already doing that, and my hand goes out to them.
I don't know. I mean, I don't particularly agree with the war either, but I think that you know, if they draft you, that you should go anyway. I mean, I don't know. I guess I would. I'm not of draft age yet, but...
You see, I find it very hard to put blind faith in anything, you know? And that's why I always get into arguments with people from all different sides, because, you know, I don't do what anybody says just because they say it. And believe me, it was very hard getting through school with that kind of attitude.
Yeah.
But I think that's a healthy attitude to have in a society where you're encouraged to think and speak freely.
Mm.
And I think we're strong enough to be able to support that.
All right.
Thanks very much for calling.
Okay.
And I guess that's going to just about do it for us here today. It's 11:58. Time for us to get out of here. And what's coming up next? You're coming up next?
I'm coming up next.
Should I leave it as a surprise, or should I tell people who's coming up next?
Just say it's not Power Surge.
Not Power Surge. Definitely not Power Surge. But that's a good thing. Well, I mean, it's not a good thing that Power Surge is no more, but it's a good thing because, well, we must always, you know, move and change. And you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm trying to say here. It's going to be a nice surprise. Are you going to be on every week? You're going to be on every week?
No.
Oh.
Steve just caught me today.
Okay, okay. Well, a special one-time-only surprise for this week. So stay tuned to WUSB in Stony Brook, and we're going to go out with... tell you what, before we go out, why don't you flip that? That way I'll get the whole thing on. ...tape and have it for myself. Okay, Bill Fox is here. Bill, why don't you say hello to the folks? I've been sitting here for
hello
2 hours,
folks.
And I haven't even asked you to say something.
Hello to the folks.
How you doing?
Okay.
That's good. Looking well.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Good to see you, as always. Bill Fox came in here, and he went to the back. Without saying a word, he just came in and went to the back and got this record and brought it out and insisted that I play it. And I will, because it's a good record. You want to tell us something about this? Who is this person?
Well, this is Buffy St. Marie, who, this is a 1971 album. She used to want to be a ballerina, and that's...
Does anybody remember this person?
Well, she plays every so often at IMAC.
She does?
Yeah, she's, I believe she's Hopi, if I remember correctly.
Well, she looks like an Indian.
Well, she is. It kind of works out that way.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, this is a moratorium from her. She used to want to be a ballerina album, and it's fairly self-explanatory.
Uh-huh. And what we're going to hear is one of these liberal commie pinko
songs?
Right.
This is an official card-carrying commie pinko song, Moratorium.
Uh-huh.
And enjoy. It's pretty self-explanatory.
This was
1971.
So, of course, it references are to Vietnam. But
yeah, I imagine.
You can certainly apply them for the present, and we will be applying them as such. Eric Rowley, Brain Damage. We'll see you again next week. Bill, thanks for stopping in.
Mm-hmm.
Stay tuned for our special surprise at midnight, or a couple of minutes after midnight, actually. We're running late. And the Citizen Action Update, too, will be coming up in a couple of minutes. Good night.
Fighting the war, and I guess that he thought he'd return as a hero and more. And he walked down the streets of the old hometown, and he saw how it is around here now. Well, Captain Collier had to call far too many girls for a date that night. See, all the girls had gone out with their long-haired boys. Captain Collier, he cried, well, what the hell have I been fighting for? Oh, soldier, it's to you. We want to bring you home. We want to hold you in our arms. Come back and keep us warm. Drafted and gone. He'd been told that only cowards would say no. He came home and called some old friends. They'd resisted the draft, and they both were in prison, and their wives and their kids were all skinny and having a bad time. And P.F.C. Stein, he remembered the men called political prisoners, you know where and when. Lines are tapped all the time now, and he's wondering if maybe his bravery's needed at home now. Yes, soldier, we're afraid. We're not just being fools. We're gassed and beaten here at home. We've got to change the rules. Told him he'd better join up, it would make him a man. He came home and to the park he went, and he sat down on a bench. And the dungaree girl told him he'd been a man all alone. And he looked at the sign that she carried in her hand. It said, fuck the war and bring our brothers home. That he's begun to understand now. Oh, soldier, it's for you. We want to bring you home. We need you to support us here. Come back and lend an eye. Hey, bring our brothers home. Hey, bring our brothers home.
This is the Gulf War Citizen Action Update, heard every hour on the hour on WUSB Stony Brook. On Monday, February 4th at 6 p.m., there will be a meeting at the Graduate Student Organization in the Senate Meeting Room at the Stony Brook campus in a building called Central Hall on the second floor. That meeting is taking place by the Stony Brook Coalition for Peace in the Middle East. And again, that's Monday, February 4th at 6 p.m., Central Hall, Graduate Student Organization, Senate Meeting Room. There'll be a speakout on Wednesday, February 6th at 12:30 p.m. in front of the Administration Building. And on Monday, February...